will present to you the ministerials.
Ze stappen gewoon, dat is gewild.
We will address our progress on burden sharing. Today we are releasing for the first time figures for 2019 defense spending. And I can announce that the real increase for 2019 is 3.9% across European allies and Canada. So we now have 5 consecutive years of growth in defense spending. By the end of next year, European allies and Canada will have added a cumulative total of well over $100 billion since 2016. And as you can see, more allies are reaching our goal of spending 2% of GDP on defense. This year, we expect 8 allies to spend at least 2% of GDP on defense, up from just 3 allies in 2014. This is a good trend, and we expect this to continue. The majority of allies have plans to reach 2% by 2024. In this slide, you see the increase for each individual ally. When you look at the percentages, most allies have increased their defense spending by double digits since 2014. You have all the details in the press release. We are also investing in more new capabilities. This year, 16 allies are expected to meet a benchmark of at least 20% of defense spending devoted to major equipment. Almost all allies have plans to do so by 2024. And allies are stepping up with more forces for NATO missions and operations. This is impressive progress and a sign of commitment, so NATO is on the right track. But we must keep up the positive momentum. We will also address Russia's continuing violation of the INF Treaty. Russia has until the 2nd of August to verifiably destroy its SSC-8 missiles, which violate the treaty. The United States and other allies have tried to engage with Russia about their new missile system for years, including in the NATO-Russia Council. We are planning to hold a meeting of the NATO-Russia Council next week to raise the issue again. We call on Russia to take the responsible path. But unfortunately, we have seen no indication that Russia intends to do so. In fact, it continues to develop and field the new missiles. And there are just 5 weeks left for Russia to save the treaty. So tomorrow we will decide on NATO's next steps in the event Russia does not comply. Our response will be defensive, measured and coordinated. We will not mirror what Russia does. We do not intend to deploy new land-based nuclear missiles in Europe. We do not want a new arms race. But as Russia is deploying new missiles, we must ensure that our deterrence and defense remains credible and effective. This is NATO's job. Effective deterrence and defense also means staying ahead of the technological curve, including artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and next-generation communications. So ministers will discuss how NATO's defense planning process will be used to ensure allies are investing in new technologies, how joint capability development provides access to cutting-edge capabilities which individual allies could not afford alone, like next-generation NATO surveillance drones and planes, and how NATO sets standards to ensure our forces can operate seamlessly together. We are also updating our guidelines for resilient infrastructure, including telecommunications. We will be joined by our partners Finland and Sweden, as well as EU High Representative Mogherini, because these technologies raise challenges and opportunities for us all, and this could be a promising area for future NATO-EU cooperation. Ministers will also approve NATO's first ever space policy, creating a framework for how NATO should deal with opportunities and challenges in space for alliance security and operations. Space is part of our daily lives, and while it can be used for peaceful purposes, it can also be used for aggression. Satellites can be jammed, hacked, or weaponized. Anti-satellite weapons could cripple communications. So it is important that we are vigilant and resilient also in space. NATO can serve as a key forum, bringing allies together to share capabilities and information. Afghanistan will also be an important point on our agenda, with a meeting of all nations contributing to our training mission. While the security situation remains serious, we see a unique opportunity for peace. Allies fully support US efforts to reach a peaceful settlement in Afghanistan, and our continued commitment, both with forces and funding, is key to creating the conditions for peace. Finally, we will host a meeting on the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS. The coalition has made remarkable progress, retaking all the territory once held by ISIS terrorists. Now we must ensure that they do not come back. That is why NATO's training mission in Iraq is so important, and why we will continue our efforts together with allies and partners in the Global Coalition. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, we'll start with Financial Times over there. Up there, please. Yep, blue suit. Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Michael Peel, Financial Times. Secretary General, could you tell us some more, please, about what responses are being considered if Russia does not come into compliance with the INF by August the 2nd? In more detail, what some of these would be, please. Thank you.
So I will not preempt the outcome of the ministerial that starts tomorrow. But of course, we need to respond if Russia does not come back into compliance with the INF treaty. And the defense ministers will discuss measures on when it comes to how NATO will respond if Russia does not come back into compliance. What I can say is that the deployment of the Russian missiles, the SSC-8, is something we have been concerned about for several years. We have seen the deployment taking place over several years. The concerns about the new Russian missile was first raised by the Obama administration, and it was also actually addressed at the NATO summit in Wales in 2014. So this is not something that surprises us. This is something we have seen developing over years, and it's part of a pattern of increased Russian investments in military capabilities close to our borders. And therefore, NATO has already started to adapt and to respond to this pattern of Russian behavior by, for instance, increasing the readiness of forces, by deploying forces to the eastern part of the alliance. So we have already started an adaptation to a more assertive Russian behavior.
Okay, we'll go to the front row here, please.
Thank you very much. Andrew Fasanyar from Mariana News. If the peace agreement achieved in Afghanistan, will NATO continue its financial and military commitments beyond 2021?
So first of all, we are strongly supportive of the peace efforts, and all allies support them, and we are in close consultations with the U.S. Chief Negotiator, Ambassador Khalilzad. He has been here several times consulting and briefing allies, and this will also be an issue we discuss at the meeting that starts tomorrow. Allies are committed to support the peace process, partly by continuing to provide support to the Afghan forces, our train, assist and advise mission, because we strongly believe that a Taliban has to understand that they will not win on the battlefield, and that's important to create the conditions for a peaceful, negotiated political solution. So that therefore, we will continue to provide support. We will also continue to provide financial support, and allies have committed to provide continued financial support until 2024. Then, of course, the presence of NATO troops in Afghanistan after a peace deal will, of course, depend on the content of the deal. But I think it's a bit too early to speculate exactly on what kind of presence we will have after a potential deal, because we haven't seen the content of the deal yet.
James?
Yes, Brooks Center, James, Defense Weekly. I'd like to come back to the INF. Whatever options you install, and I can only see three, either an extension and reinforcement of the U.S. nuclear umbrella, or nuclear missiles in the air on airplanes, or a European missile defense system. These are all expensive options. Regardless of which one you choose, do you foresee any major impact on defense spending and on the budget of NATO as a result of the options you do choose? Thank you.
Again, it's absolutely fair to ask questions about what measures NATO will undertake if Russia doesn't come back into compliance. But I will not now tell you what ambassadors what the ministers will decide and discuss tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. I think we have to first have the meeting and then tell you what we decided and discussed during that meeting. But of course, and our focus now is to continue to call on Russia to come back into compliance. They still have time, 5 weeks. Time is running out, but Russia still has time to come back into compliance and to respect the INF treaty. As I said, the deployment of the new SSC-8 missiles is something that has taken place over years, and it's part of a broader pattern of Russia's modernization of its forces. And NATO is responding already to this pattern of Russian behavior. Part of that is high readiness, increased presence of our forces in the eastern part of the alliance, and increased defense spending. So we are increasing the spending, we will increase defense spending, and this will enable us to invest in new capabilities to strengthen our deterrence and defense, also in response to a Russian violation or continued Russian violation of the INF Treaty.
Deutsche Welle. Over there, no? Lady over there.
Hi, Terry Schultz with Deutsche Welle and NPR. I understand that Iran is not a NATO issue, but are you concerned that the tensions in the Gulf will spill over and become a NATO issue? You have the United States on one side, and I understand that Acting Defense Secretary Esper is planning to raise it here at the meeting. Do you expect that? And is this another issue where the Europeans and the U.S. are on different sides, and how concerned are you about both the actual situation on the ground and the situation it creates within NATO? Thanks.
So we are concerned about the situation in the Gulf, and we are also concerned about Iran's destabilizing activities in the region, its support for terrorist groups, its missile program, and also the announcement that Iran will restart the enrichment of uranium. And all allies share these concerns. So that's also, I think that we welcome the fact that even though Iran is not formally on the agenda for the defense ministerial meeting, I expect that Iran will be discussed, both in the meeting and in different bilateral meetings that takes place on the margins of the defense ministerial meeting, and also expect that Defense Secretary Esper will brief allies. And I think this is useful because then NATO is a platform for NATO allies and ministers to exchange views, to exchange analysis about the challenges we all face in the Gulf.
Okay, we'll go to our Russian colleague over there in the third row. Yeah,
thank you very much. Mikhail Korostik of Kommersant, Daily Russia. You said that next week we will see a new Russia-NATO meeting. And I would like to ask you, do you expect any new announcements, any new developments, or will it be just a statement of already known positions? Thank you.
So I strongly believe in dialogue, and I especially believe it is important to have dialogue when the situation and relations are difficult. And there is no way to hide that the relationship between NATO and Russia is more difficult now than it was not so many years ago. But the NATO-Russia Council is an all-weather council. It's an all-weather institution that facilitates dialogue between NATO and NATO allies and Russia. And I really hope and I expect that we will have an open, we will have a frank, we will have a real discussion about the INF issue. I expect, of course, the NATO allies to raise their concerns about the Russian violations, but also make clear that if NATO, if Russia doesn't come back into compliance with the treaty, NATO has to respond. As I said, we will respond in a defensive and measured way. But at the same time, we need to make sure that we deliver credible deterrence and defense, also in a world without the INF treaty and with more Russian missiles.
Washington Post. Washington Post over there, and then we'll go to AFP.
Thank you. Michael Greenbaum from the Washington Post. a question about Iran again. Did President Trump warn you last week that he was considering airstrikes against Iran? And you mentioned Iran's destabilizing activities within the Persian Gulf region. How would you characterize U.S. actions in the region right now? Thank you.
So in NATO, we exchange analysis, assessments on a regular basis about many different issues, so including, of course, about the situation in the Gulf and Iran. It's not right if I go into the specifics of these ongoing consultations and exchange of information. We, for instance, share intelligence. That's one of the most important things our new intelligence division does, is actually to make sure that we share intelligence also on the situation in the Gulf. But as you know, NATO as an alliance is not directly involved in the current situation in the Gulf. Some NATO allies are. I think that the important thing now is to reduce tensions, and I welcome the fact that the United States so clearly has stated that they are ready to sit down and talk with Iran to reduce tensions and to avoid any miscalculations that can create really dangerous situations.
Agence France-Presse.
Hi, Damon Wick, AFP. Just going back to the space issue that you mentioned earlier, do you foresee further down the line that Article 5 could apply to a space situation?
The important thing of the decision ministers will make during this ministerial meeting on space is that we create a framework, a NATO framework for how to address challenges in the space, the opportunities and the challenges. And then we will build different elements and make decisions strengthening our space policy in the coming months and years. Of course, NATO allies have addressed the challenges in space for years. We have satellites. There are in space. We have satellites and capabilities which are important for navigation, for command and control, for communications, for tracking incoming missiles, missiles attacks, and so on. So space is already very important for NATO allies. But the new thing we do today, or at the meeting tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, is to agree, join the common NATO framework on how to address the opportunities and the challenges in space. Therefore, I think it's too early to speculate about all the different elements, including how we will address the issue of Article 5.
Okay. Wall Street Journal, yeah, gentleman in the light suit.
Thank you. James Marston, Wall Street Journal. US officials have been quite vocal recently, raising concerns about the European Defence Fund and PESCO around questions such as interoperability, access, and so on. These are initiatives that you've welcomed in the past. Do you think the US criticism is justified?
I strongly believe that EU efforts on defence, including PESCO and the European Defence Fund, can help to improve burden sharing between Europe and the United States, as long as this is done in a way which complement and don't compete with NATO. And it has been clearly stated from European leaders again and again that these efforts are there to complement and not to compete, not to be an alternative to NATO. Then we have a close dialogue, NATO and EU, but also between NATO allies like the United States and the EU, on the details on how these different instruments are going to be developed and established, and some of the details are yet to be decided. Because it is important that these new instruments, as PESCO and the European Defence Fund, that they don't create new barriers between our defence industries. We have to work together. And not least to address the technological challenges we are faced with. So we welcome EU efforts as long as they strengthen the European pillar within NATO and not create any new barriers or establish any alternative competing structures. And that dialogue continues.
Okay, we'll go to the front row, gentleman with the brown jacket. Thanks.
Thank you. Khushut Nabizadeh from Afghan Media Khama Press. Mr. Secretary General, as you're aware, Taliban have said and warned Afghan media that within 1 week, if they do not stop any advertisements and media programs that support the military operations and the military achievements, they can be targeted. What's NATO's stance and reaction towards it?
We strongly condemn any threat against any journalist because it is absolutely a fundamental democratic right to have freedom of press, for journalists to work, to do their work, and to report and write about what they want in the way they want. That's a really a core democratic value, and democracy, the rule of law are fundamental values for NATO. And we have seen that journalists have been killed in Afghanistan, but also in other countries. And it is extremely important to stand up for their right to report, to work, because that is so important for our efforts to strengthen democracy and the rule of law.
Europa Press.
Thank you, Secretary General. Ana Pisano from the Spanish news agency Europa Press. After decisions tomorrow on the INF, how quickly do you think that we'll see these being implemented, particularly, I don't know, of a more conventional or military nature? Will they be straight away rolled out from the 2nd of August, or do you think that it would be a more scaled out deployment? Thank you.
Again, first of all, we still call on Russia to come back into compliance. There is still a window of opportunity. It's getting smaller and smaller. But until the 2nd of August, Russia still has the opportunity to save the INF treaty. And if the treaty breaks down, then the responsibility lies solely with Russia, because they have now violated the treaty for several years. We will, I expect us to agree on different measures. So therefore, some we can implement quite quickly, others will take more time. And as I also highlighted earlier, is that NATO has already started to adapt to the fact that Russia is investing more in nuclear capabilities, different kinds of nuclear capabilities, including those who are violating the INF Treaty. And the biggest adaptation of our alliance, the most significant reinforcement of our collective defense since the end of the Cold War, is taking place now. And we see that also with the increased defense spending, because it is not free. It has a cost to strengthen our collective defense, and that's the reason why we are increasing defense spending, and also why the figures we published today are so important, because they show that NATO allies have the will, the strength, and the commitment to live up to their promises on defense spending.
Okay, we'll go to the lady in the back there. Yeah.
It's Dorota from Polish TV, Polsat. Secretary General, you are in the process of designating your deputy. I would like to know which criteria are you taking into consideration in this process. When will we know the final decision? And what do you think about the Polish candidate, Krzysztof Szczerski, the presidential minister? Apparently, he has an unofficial backing of the Americans.
So we are in the process, or I'm in the process of appointing a new deputy secretary general. That is an important position. It's of course, a person that works very closely with me. And it's a merit-based process, and I welcome the fact that there are different highly qualified candidates, but I think it's wrong if I now start to go into the details of that process. It will be a merit-based process, and I welcome the fact that we have several good candidates.
Tas.
Thank you very much, TASS News Agency, Tenis Duproven. Secretary General, a follow-up to James' question about the defense spending and the INF Treaty, as Russia has already claimed that it has never violated this treaty, it will not do anything to return to it. So when the time come to take measures of preparing to the world without INF Treaty. Do you expect that the defense spending will rise even higher, much more than 2% that the NATO countries have to pay now? And my question about the cyber defense, do you plan to discuss at the NRC Council next week the information about U.S. Hacker attacks against Russia, according to the statement by New York Times? United States has infected Russian energy systems with malware programs. So do you plan to discuss what maybe the Russian answer and how to avoid it? Thank you very much.
There is no doubt that Russia is violating the INF Treaty, and this is something which was then raised by the Obama administration several years ago. And in the beginning, Russia denied the existence of the SS-C8 missile. After some years, they actually accepted that the missile existed, but then they tried to deny that the range violated the INF Treaty. But again, all allies agree that Russia is in violation. Several allies have independently, based on their own intelligence, assessed that Russia is in clear violation of the treaty. And Russia has not answered our questions, and not in a verifiable way, and transparent way, shown that they are in compliance with the treaty. So NATO has shown, and NATO allies have shown patience, and we have actually used years to try to get Russia back into compliance before we did anything. So I think the fact that all allies agree that now the time has come to tell the Russians that if they don't come back into compliance, then we don't have any INF treaty anymore, because an arms control treaty doesn't work if it's only respected by one side. And it is a strong signal of unity that all allies agree with the US, both on the assessment that Russia is in violation and on the decision to start a withdrawal process that ends on the 2nd of August, unless Russia comes back into verifiable compliance. So that's no doubt that Russia is violating this cornerstone arms control agreement, which has served all so well for many decades. Russia still has the chance to come back into compliance, but of course the likelihood of that to happen diminishes every day because time is running out. So one of the reasons why we made the pledge to increase defense spending in 2014 after years of cutting defense spending across NATO was, of course, a more assertive Russia, which already had started to deploy the SS-8, the dual-capable, nuclear-capable missile, but also many other decisions and actions by Russia to strengthen its conventional and nuclear capabilities. So yes, part of the reason why we are increasing defense spending is to provide the necessary funds for us responding to the SSC-8 missile, the Russian SSC-8 missile, and the pattern of Russian behavior which we have seen over several years. I think that the NATO-Russia Council is important also because if any ally or Russia has anything to raise with the NATO allies, then they can raise it, and that's the reason why we have the NATO-Russia Council, and that's also the reason why I welcome the fact that we can have open and frank discussions.
We'll go to the gentleman in the second row with the blue shirt.
Bobby Christa from Telma Televisia, North Macedonia. Mr. Secretary General, which is your assessment about the process of ratification of accession protocol of North Macedonia, which is going very fast comparing with other countries? What is, according to you, the reason? And is it possible for North Macedonia to become the 30 member state till summit in December? And what are the major challenges, both from military and political aspect, in this ongoing process? Thank you.
The NATO enlargement is a great success story. It has helped to spread democracy, stability, prosperity across Europe. And now the latest new member will be North Macedonia. All allies signed the accession protocol. When was that? Last spring? No, in February, I think. Yeah. And in February, and then the ratification process has now started. And as you say, the ratification process goes quite fast. Normally, at least last time when Montenegro joined, it took 1 year. Therefore, I'm not able, and it's not up to me. It's up to the 28 national parliaments to decide how fast they can ratify the accession protocol. It will be great if all could finish by December, when we have the leaders' meeting of NATO in London in December. But if not, I expect that to happen soon after. So North Macedonia is on the track to be a full member. North Macedonia meets the NATO standards. And just the fact that we now can agree on having North Macedonia as our 30th member reflects the fact that the big name issue, or the difficult name issue, has been solved, and that's very much because of the courage shown by the two political leaders, Prime Minister Tsipras and Prime Minister Zaev, in Skopje and Athens.
Okay, and we'll go to the gentleman over there.
Miloš Udović, Daily Vest, Montenegro. NATO recently decided to donate a three-day radar to Montenegro. So what it means for NATO to help member states with equipment, especially smaller member states like Montenegro? Thank you.
NATO is about solidarity. NATO is about that we protect and defend each other. We help each other. So I think the new NATO radar, or the radar we provide to Montenegro, shows that we actually help each other And that's the reason, especially for smaller countries, to be part of NATO, because then you're part of a family, you're part of an organization where we support and help each other. That is important for Montenegro, but it's important for all NATO allies. But it's not only small NATO allies that receive help. For instance, we now have a big NATO investment, a couple of hundred US dollars for infrastructure in Poland to facilitate more US equipment in Poland. So it just shows that NATO provides help, invest in infrastructure in many different NATO allied countries, and all of this is good for the whole alliance.
Okay. Very good.
Alf Johnson from the VG Norwegian Daily. Good morning. If I may ask you, on the NATO readiness initiative, the 4x30 that is going to be up and standing next year, if you can give us the status on the fourth generation, since we know that certain countries will not be able to reach the threshold of the NATO expectations. Thank you.
So we are on good track to meet the pledge we made to have 30 battalions, 30 air squadrons, and 30 combat ships ready within 30 days by the end of this year or beginning of the next year. And this is extremely important because a very important element in our response to a more unpredictable world, to more threats and challenges in the south, with a more assertive Russia in cyber, with new technologies, is to have a higher readiness of our forces, to create a culture of readiness, to have forces available on short notice to be able to reinforce the support any part of the alliance when or if needed. And I expect all allies to contribute to this higher readiness because all allies agreed when we met at our summit last year to have this 430s, this increased readiness. Of course, allies are expected to contribute, according to their size. Allies will contribute in different ways, but I expect all allies to contribute. We have already a lot of contributions from many allies, but we still have some gaps, and we will continue to work on those gaps to make sure that we fill those gaps by the end of the year.
Okay. Thank you very much. This concludes this press conference, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.